especially if it's something that you're like, you're asking me to step out of my comfort zone. I've never been asked to do something that wasn't out of my comfort zone in some way, shape, or form. Like, I love talking. Like, this is super easy. Like, this is easy breezy to me. I don't like talking to journalists. And in the last 2 months, that's all I've done. I don't enjoy writing. In the last 2 months, that's what I've been asked to do the most. And so I'm asking, like, what are you doing, guy? Like, why? I thought we were operating my strengths. Remember? We're doing strength finders. Operate just in our strengths. Like, why are you asking me to operate in my weakness? Because in my weakness, I have to either lean on him or I have to figure out who he has put around me that can help me with those things. And learn to ask for help instead of, because I couldn't say no. I mean, I guess I could, but I wanted people to have the opportunity to hear a nuanced perspective. And so those are those moments where you're like, I said yes to this, but I didn't mean this. Like, I said, yes, I would do this thing. But when I said that, I meant not that. And so, you know, it's a lot of times being willing to say yes every single day to something that, like I said, you may or may not think you may. There are things I've said yes to. Nothing has happened. Nothing has came out of it. And I'm like, why did he tell me to do this? Like, why? This is so silly. Like, it's been a year and a half. And then something will happen and someone will ask for something. Like, hey, I'm, you know, have you ever done a class on blah, blah, blah? And I'm like, I have never actually taught a class, but I have all prepared for a class to do exactly that. They're like, really? And I'm like, well, 2 years ago, God told me. And nothing ever came of it. So once you have that experience where you hear from the Lord and you think, even if you think like, wait, what was that? If it's uncomfortable, I would say if it's uncomfortable at first where you're like, I don't know if I'm supposed to do that. The first question I always ask, does it line up with his word? So, you know, there are things that God would never ask me to do. You know, things that do not line up with his word, things that are, that don't have integrity, things that are compromising, you know, to my walk with him, to my relationship to others, you know, in terms of like my husband or my children, like God's not going to ask me to do that. But when it comes to the things where I'm like, if I could check off all those boxes, like, well, it doesn't compromise. It actually makes sense that he would ask me to do this. Then I just do it. And then I say, okay, Lord, I'm going to do this because I believe you're here. This is what I'm hearing you tell me to do. If it's not, shut the door. You know, shut the door and just say, I ain't asking you to do that. You know, but I will say 95% of the time, he 100% asked me to do it. But we have to be able to quiet our mind enough to hear that, whatever it is.
Were you called to do anything that felt pandemic specific to you?
I think the YouTube channel, that's the first thing he told me to do. When he said, you know, the time is now. So when, after I had a conversation with my boss and I was like, I ain't doing nothing. I ain't doing this. Like we ain't doing this. We is too many. Like you can do what you want. And he woke me up that Saturday morning and said, the time is now. I knew exactly what he was talking about. And I was like, okay, Lord, what do you want me to do? And he said, I want you to make videos and I want you to educate. It's like, make videos. Like, what do you mean? And I happened to look up and I don't know if anybody else does this, but the cafe channels on YouTube. Like, if you have never gone to a cafe in France on YouTube and drank your coffee from home, you really should try this. It's always up. My daughter and I love it. And they have bookstore ones now, too, which are even more fun. But it was on the TV. And I was like, YouTube. And like I said, I had been binge watching YouTube. And so I'm like, okay, well, now how do I do that? Like, and I was not worried at all about people watching the video. I wasn't concerned. I didn't know anything about subscribers or like, I didn't know anything about any of that. I was just trying to figure out how to get the stupid thing up. But when I told the boss at the time, like this, the Lord said, the time is now. She's like, it's music to my ears. He said he wants me to make videos. She's like, perfect. Record the video. Send it to me. We'll edit it and we'll create your YouTube channel and we'll put it up for you. So all the barriers of the things I was like, gosh, how am I going to do this? Like, I don't know how to do this. The Lord just took out. and was like, I just need you to say yes. And once you say yes, I'll take care of everything else. And that was pandemic specific because of the civil unrest that was happening due to racial justice. The issues that were happening, you know, where people were feeling the Supreme Court was being stacked. Like, there were so many things in there that were happening, and people were watching a lot of YouTube. And so I feel like that was the I wouldn't have said it at the time, like, oh, this is, I knew the YouTube thing was because we were in a pandemic and people were going to be watching it. Where traditionally when I had taught classes, it was in person, right? We weren't doing this. And so, but it made sense to me. It wasn't like that. Nobody's, you know, I never even said nobody's going to watch it. Cause again, I didn't know and I didn't care. I was hoping nobody was going to watch it. like, cause people are mean online, right? Like, I didn't want to deal with mean comments. Like, when you're first starting something, the last thing you want is to be discouraged by someone like, you're dumb. This is stupid. So I was like, oh, how, I don't know how I'm gonna deal with the comments. I was more worried about that. Like, oh, if people do watch it and they comment, like, what am I supposed to do? But I feel like that was pandemic related because we were all stuck in the house watching a bunch of YouTube, you know, be trying to be entertained or educated, one of the two.
I'm curious, what does the word health mean to you?
Oh gosh, health is all encompassing to me. Health is physical, spiritual, emotional, mental. I feel like our body is one working organism that needs every single part to function properly, and that we are often out of alignment somewhere. And we have to understand how one thing that we're doing could be helping that out of, you know, being out of alignment, but also how does relationships play into those things being aligned. So when I hear health, I think of, you know, how is someone overall, you know, doing? You know, someone could be in great physical shape, and their marriage be terrible, right? And so your overall health is not going to be good, because you're dealing with some mental and emotional stress and maybe some spiritual stress in there. So for me, when I either for myself or saying, you know, like, I want to make sure I'm healthy, I'm always kind of doing like a system check. Like, how are your spirits? How are you, you know, how is your mental? How is your emotional? How is your relationship with God? You know, how many, have you worked out, you know, at least 3 times this week? You know, what did you eat yesterday? You know, if I'm feeling like a little sluggish or down, like, what did I eat yesterday? You know, like, did I go outside yesterday? Like, I try to, did somebody say something to me that, like, I put in the back of my mind but didn't really, you know, process? I try to think about all of those things, and that's how I also operate when it comes to my own family, right? When someone's sick, it's not just about, like, the symptom. It's about every other thing. Like, what else is going on in your life? Like, are you stressed about anything? What have you been eating? You know, have you been taking care of yourself? Have you been on the go? It's not just about the cold you caught, or, you know, maybe do you have COVID, or is it your allergy? It's not just about the thing. And I think being whole food plant-based was a thing that really helped me see that everything's connected. In that, you know, we treat things singularly, right? Like, oh, your arm hurts? Let's see what's wrong with your arm. You know, I felt like I got stung by a bee in my head. I was driving yesterday and I was like, what the heck was that? Like, the pain shot all the way down my arm. Like, well, if I got stung here, like, why is it pain? You know, that's clearly not a bee. But just how it was all connected to, it actually was like, I turned my head too fast. again, I'm 44. These things happen. but just even in that, right, the class, one of the exercise classes I take, it focuses on strength and balance. You know, balance is so important as we age to be able to, you know, if you slip or, you know, you lose your balance, to be able to regain it with your core. And we don't think about that until we need hip replacement surgery or, you know, we've broken a hip because, you know, we fall. We don't think about it at the time. And really kind of being conscious about those things before they happen is the whole reason I went whole food plant-based. Wasn't because, like, I, you know, I don't like meat or I love animals so much. You know, they're cute, but there's no other food. Might have to eat you. But I knew that this was something that could benefit me later on if I just took care of the discipline now. You know, dealt with the hard stuff now and became disciplined in it now. As I age, this is something that could benefit me later. And so it's the same thing like with our spiritual walk and having some type of, you know, time with God discipline. Like I may not need this now in this moment. I might be having a great day, but I may need to draw on this later. And so these things are kind of like in this reserve tank. And so when I hear the word health, all those things, you know, kind of come to mind, when it means like what does health look like?
What does the word safety mean to you?
Safety or safe?
Safety.
Oh, gosh. Safety means that I trust God. I truly believe that safety in real time doesn't exist. That we are never truly safe, you know. So in order for me not to worry or have anxiety about that all the time, you know, or do things that try to like create this false environment of, say, you know, this false look of safety, I have to trust God that he is doing what he said he will do, which is protect me and my family for whatever that looks like, right? And that he knows what's best, and he has mine and my children and my husband's best interests at heart, and that he will keep us, you know, safe. My son just took a COVID test. He just said it.
Is he okay?
It's negative.
Right.
That's why I was like, looked a little bit more like, wait, she's, my mom sent me the picture. Speaking of COVID.
Thinking about safety and that really sort of tiny, narrow confines of a COVID conversation, what are some of the things that you've been doing to keep yourself feeling safer?
Yeah. I couldn't figure out once we did the 6 feet apart thing, like, why was we ever so close in the first place? Like, why at the grocery store did I need to be right on your back to get in the line? So that's one of the things that I feel like I still practice. Like, I still give distance. We still will mask certain times, certain places, especially if there are going to be elderly. If someone else has a mask on, I will ask, like, would you prefer for, and I know that's like not popular, but I'll ask, like, would you prefer that I was wearing a mask? Cause I can wear one if you prefer it. Some people said yes. Some people, I don't care. Like, for me, safety also has to do with how I treat you and what makes you feel safe. And I guess that kind of goes along the idea that I feel like God's got me, right? So how can I make you feel safer, in your space? What else? We don't really go to super busy places, but that has probably less to do with COVID than it does. I don't like being in crowded places, like not enough exits, not, but we won't not do something because of that, but it's just not our thing to be and to be like, oh, there might be a little too many people there. Like, let's not go there. But we weren't really out and about social people. Like, we just do our daily thing. I have grocery shop at a really weird time when most people aren't there. Like, after I drop my kids off, so I'm at the grocery store like 8:30 in the morning. Like, everybody's at work. One time I thought I knew I didn't have COVID. I had taken a test and I knew I didn't have COVID, but I had a little cough. And so I went to spin class and I said, I'm wearing my mask because I have a little cough and I don't want to weird you guys out. And they all looked at me like I lost my mind. They're like, you are not spinning with that mask on. And I was like, I just want to make you guys feel. They're like, we're fine. Take the mask. We're not trying to resuscitate you. So sometimes I think I can do like overdo it. You know what I mean? Because you don't want people side eyeing you. But I think my biggest precaution, and I would probably say our family in general, is making sure other people feel safe around us, and that we're safe people, right? Like, we're not going to mock you for wanting us all to wear masks to your birthday party, or, like, you know what I mean? Like, or come in waves or whatever you want. We're not going to be like, I'm not coming. That's stupid. I don't have time for that. Like, if that's what you want, cool. That's what you want. Let's do it. No big deal.
How have you felt about how sort of local governments, either municipal or at the state level, have been handling this?
I mean, I'm in Ohio. So I felt like our governor did really good. He is a Republican governor, and he got a lot of pushback from his party, and he kind of like stood his ground, which that's what you want, right? Like, you want someone who's going to be like, we're going to do what we're being asked to do by our federal government, which is this. And so I thought he did well. And I think I felt like when it was time to just say, you know what, here we are, there's vaccines available. We've made them available to everyone at every corner you could possibly go to. It's time. It's time to, you know, be done. And I think some people push back against that, but also giving that responsibility back to the store owners, event, you know, restaurant owners, and saying, you guys can choose. Like, you can, there is no state mandate, but you can decide. We still want people to wear masks to enter our, you know, establishment. Like, I feel like that is empowering people to make their own decisions. And again, like, there ain't no law saying I can't wear a mask. And I don't really feel like, at least where I live in Lorain County, it's extremely rural, except for certain places. Like, when I see people with masks, I'm not just like, I don't feel like people are like, oh, they got that mask. Like, nobody cares. Like, people are like, just like, you know what? That's what you felt like. You felt like you wanted to wear that mask for your safety. Cool. Like I said, if I'm in their presence and I'm like, would you be more comfortable if I were wearing a mask too? Like, our doctor's office still require them. And they provide them. Like, you know, and so I think the state of Ohio, I personally feel like they did a really good job. They did what they were asked to do.
Were you able to keep attending church services in person during the pandemic?
No, our church had branches. And so we went to a branch of the church, and it was being held at a school. And so the school shut down, and so that service had to end. And because the main campus wasn't necessarily big enough, they did church. And they were already streaming online, so they just continued to stream online. But when they opened up, they said, this is what we can accommodate, this amount of people. After that, we're going to have to turn people away. And we just never, like, attempted to, like, I mean, I got 8 kids. We never attempted to get somewhere in time. But I know there are other churches in my area that didn't. Like, so if we really wanted to, we could. But I also know in one of them, every single person got COVID. And, you know, I've never been afraid of it. But we just never knew what was going to happen, right? Until we saw, like, what it could do, what would happen. It was just like, I don't want that. I would say, I don't want that. I don't want your cold. I don't want your flu. I don't want none of it. Like, I don't want anything you got. Like, keep it. I don't want it. You know, or like in 2020, we wore a mask everywhere. I didn't get sick once. I was like, I didn't get sick once this year. Maybe this mask thing so bad. But yeah, so we weren't, our particular church had to shut down solely because the school that it was housed had shut down. And we just made a choice not to, like, try to get into the church service when they reopened it. And they reopened, the main one shut down, they reopened when the state said churches can now reopen, as long as they can accommodate people with the social distancing.
I'd love to hear more about what the terms pro-Black and pro-life mean to you.
Yeah, so pro-Black to me means that anything that advances the Black community, anything that pushes us to a place of abundance as a whole, as a community as a whole. And pro-life means to be for things that are living. And so regardless of proximity, where it's located, where they're located, that we support their ability to live. And so when I say, like, regardless of proximity, that could mean in the womb, but that could also mean in the projects. That, you know, could also mean in prison. You know, all those lives have value. Everyone's lives have value. And so I think what ended up happening, either purposefully or not, with the pro-life movement is it became a very white evangelical, even Catholic movement, where people were using rhetoric that wasn't pro-Black. That was more or less like, you know, more racist, more white, you know, more on the lines of white supremacy. And not that they were using that term, but it was like, well, the real racism is in abortion. Well, it had to come from somewhere. So, like, it, you know, racism didn't start, you know, when abortion started. It had to come from somewhere. Like, a person has to be racist. And I think that was my frustration, is that, like, you keep using the Black community as, like, this example of racism when we look at the numbers. But there's so many more things that are leading women to Black women to make this choice, that if those systems, you know, were fixed, or at this point were burnt down and rebuilt, then that end result would be different. And so that's what made me put the pro-Black first, because I felt like in order for me to advocate for life from womb to tomb for the Black community, I had to be able to address everything that woman or that, you know, man, the man or whoever is going through during their life, that would lead them to that choice. Because that's the Band-Aid is the choice, is the end result, right? It doesn't actually fix what happened up here. And so I wanted to be very specific to the Black community, because that's where my passion was. And because I had been involved in racial justice even before I was involved in the pro-life movement, there was no separation to me. It was painfully obvious that these issues were connected, and not just at the end with the issue of abortion. That, again, racism started way back here. And so how do I help the Black community look at the history of racism and how it isn't, you know, how it keeps these systems that you typically can all agree on, right? Typically, we can all agree on police brutality and the healthcare systems, you know, the justice system, even, you know, economics. We can all agree on that. Where it starts getting real messy is when we get to, you know, we're adults now, we're making decisions, and how do these decisions then affect our future? And as we began to see the population numbers in general decline, but also in the Black community decline, what is the cause of that? What are all the variables that are happening? And how does that, when we're looking at these issues up here, how is that going to affect our future when we are limiting our voting power? We are limiting, you know, our activism power, right? Because we're making a choice that's not beneficial to our legacy, because someone is telling us that in order to be able to succeed as Black women, we really need to be able to have the option to abort our children or to not have children, which is crap. Like, that's a terrible answer. So I can't have liberation, I can't have freedom like a white woman. And in order for me to do that, I have to sacrifice my child? So we've created this to sound as if we're being given something. But in the reality, something's being taken away from us. And we're still not getting that freedom. A poor woman that finds herself pregnant and feels like she needs to have an abortion so that she doesn't become more poor, her problem's not she's pregnant, her problem's she's poor. And she's going to be poor after the abortion. Like, she'll come out with $2 million. Like, she's going to come out with, you know, some heartache that she had to make this decision based on her life circumstances. Even if she feels like it's the best decision she made, right? No one comes out of that thinking like, ah, best decision I made. It's like, gosh, I had to make that really hard decision because I felt like that was the only decision I had, which isn't choice. That was the only choice I had in that time so that I could be where I am now. Where it's like, that should be. We need to fix the other stuff so that if you're looking something in the face, where I would always say, this is the question you just asked is a question I get all the time. When you're looking something in the face and someone says, like, Sherilyn, how is this going to affect the Black community? And I give all the points I just gave. You can't, there's no rebuttal to that. Because you're basically telling me the solution to Black maternal mortality rate, the solution to economics, the solution to racial inequalities in the justice system is abortion. And that's how we're solving that problem. And you know that's not true. You know that's not how we solve that problem. And when I tell you that that's not true, you immediately punt to, well, a woman should have the right to do what she wants. We're not talking about the same thing anymore. Because now you're just talking about independent choice. Independent choice for no reason at all, with no rationale. That's completely different than having a conversation about how does racism and systems created put us, end up putting us in a place where we have to make a decision whether or not we are going to sacrifice our children for our own liberation, because that takes actually a lot of work to solve. And if you just go ahead and slap the women's rights sticker on it and try to cover us all, we still don't get what we need. My community still doesn't get what it needs. All we get is abortion, right? Like, we don't get any of the other things solved. Our women just get abortion. And I just really began to feel like someone needs to go. We were having all these conversations outside of the Black community, and we're talking about the Black community, but nobody was actually going in and having these conversations. And I was like, somebody's got to go in and have the conversation, because I'm tired of being used. And both sides, like I said before, like with the pro-life movement saying that, like, the real racism is in abortion. I'm tired of being used. What say ye? Go into the Black community and say, what do you think? What are you saying? What do you, and most, the majority of them saying, I'm tired of being used as the example. Yes, I know, I've known, so, you know, a couple people that had abortion for this reason, and, you know, they're really struggling right now, and they don't know why they're really struggling right now. Or she had, did it so that she could go to Yale, and, you know, she's very successful. You know, I've had all these conversations, you know, and they've all boiled down to what could have been different. If something was different, what could have been different that you would have made a different choice, or they would have made a different choice? Oh, well, yeah, I guess if Yale had childcare and a maternity house for you to still be able to attend and do well, then I guess, yeah, that made it, that choice would have looked differently. It may not, they may not have made a different choice. It just would have looked different, you know? And now it's no longer about, I can't go. Now it's more about, what will I have the freedom to do while I'm there, and what will I not? Those are different questions. but you, what you do is you remove the barrier that you're telling me was there. And I think that once I began to hear those stories, I was like, oh, we need to address the problem, not these solutions down here, not be sitting here arguing about what's the best solution for this humongous gunshot wound. Like, what's the best Band-Aid to put on it? We need to actually be up here figuring out what the heck is happening and how can we fix this. And that once we fix that, let's then take a look at what's happening down here.
Where do you think we're at in terms of addressing some of those structural problems? So the woman who's still, in the example you gave, the woman who still doesn't have access to childcare, she's still poor.
Yeah. I think that it's, number one, that we have to take our power back as a community and start being who God has called us to be. That is to be the church. We have become so individualistic, where it's all about what I want, my rights, my, you know, whatever the right is. We have to go on forever about this, you know, that we forgot about what it meant to, what servitude meant, what it meant to, you know, serve others in that way where we're putting other people before ourselves, you know, and there's a difference between putting somebody above you. I'm talking about their needs, right? All my needs are met. All my basic needs are met. So if my neighbor comes to my door and they're like, we don't have any food, like, okay, well, here's some food, right? It may not be great. And maybe I was planning on using that chicken on Friday. Like, but as of today, I don't need that. So here you go. We need to get back to that. And that's a mindset that I really believe that the church has to work at, and the church structure has to work on, and we have to be the ones to call them out on it and saying, you know, what programs did we used to have that we don't have now? What types of things does our community need that we could offer? Also, what other churches in our community may be meeting those needs? What are they doing? And from that place, when we know what our communities need, our counties need, our states need, we can advocate on a higher level for those. Because right now we're just throwing stuff out, right? Like that, right? You know, the thing that Dobbs did do is now we're all everybody's spinning trying to help people. All of a sudden, we've got plans, you know, on the table for the child tax credit. We've got plans for, you know, helping with childcare. Like all of a sudden, you know, we've got all these bipartisan things working. Where before we were like, oh, no, we're not willing to do that. Oh, no, we don't want to cover child care. Oh, no, we don't want to do, we're not going to do a child tax credit unless there's money for abortion. Like, now it's off the table. So now people are, you know, throwing things out there, but it's not a one size fits all. Not every community is going to need the same thing. And that's what we have to do. And I truly believe that, like, as a nation, we have to go back to being involved with our communities and knowing what's going on. Yes, we're all busy. Yes, we're all raising families, or maybe not. Maybe we're out, like, jet setting and traveling the world. But you have something to offer. You have a gift to offer. And maybe it's not the same gift as mine. It shouldn't be the same gift as mine. Or maybe it's a gift that's like mine, but you're talking about something different. How do we create a place in our communities where we are meeting the needs of others? I'm on when you got to raise a whole lot of money, something campaign.
Fundraising campaign?
What'd you say?
Fundraising campaign.
It's fundraising, but it's the big ones. It's like millions. Capital campaign. Just not like a couple thousand dollars. I'm on a capital campaign committee for a organization that meets the food insecurity needs, housing needs of, you know, of our community. And they have grown over the last 20 years, like 725%. So they need more space. Everybody should want that to happen, right? Everybody should want, you know, to be a part of that, because that is taking care of your neighbor, right? We have, you know, land trust organizations that are buying up old houses and renovating them, and they own the land, but when the person buys the house, they're going to own the house, right? And it's affordable housing in an area that's normally not affordable. Like, people are easily priced out of. When you start figuring out, here's a problem we have, who has the bandwidth, the knowledge, or the passion to tackle this problem? You know, someone's like, I have the passion and I have every file on my computer, but I ain't got the time. This person may say, I have the passion for it. I ain't got no files, but I got the money. Like, you know, once you start finding those people, that's when you put them together. The problem is we don't talk to each other. Or we're afraid if we talk to someone, they're going to take our idea. Not one single person, when I told them I was thinking about doing pro-black, pro-life, was like, ooh, let me do it. Not one. Trust me, I was waiting. So this idea that if I give out this idea that I have, somebody's going to want to take it is silly. Like, you are, like, hindering yourself and hindering your community based on independence and selfishness. And so we have to stop. We just have to stop. We want to come together when it makes sense to us individually, right? So, like, the pandemic and masking and quarantining, we want everybody to do the thing, right? Like, why? I don't understand. Wear the mask. What's the big deal? We don't feel like that about everything. That's the big deal. We're inconsistent. That's the big deal. It's easy for me to say yes to those things because I'm consistent. You want me not to have a automatic rifle? No problem. I won't. I don't own one, and I won't. Perfect. You know, you want me not to be able to legally get an abortion? Cool. I won't. You know, but I need help in these areas, right? If you don't want me to have a weapon in my home or whatever without this training or whatever, I need you to put some things in place to make sure my home is safe. What else we got? you know, because the whole idea, right, the Second Amendment is so that the government can't come into your house and take your stuff. Like, that's really the whole idea of it. So can you ensure me that the government's not going to come into my house and take my stuff? Cool. Great. Like, these are the conversations we need to be having. But instead, we're fighting. We're fighting about when we should care about each other and how we care about each other. And it's never based on the problem. The solution is never based on the actual problem. The solution is always based on the end result of the problem. And I think that that's why we've gotten to be in the place that we are now as a nation, where we are bickering and fighting and picking sides, because we don't know how to say, stop, everybody freeze. Let's go back to the beginning and let's fix the problem, right? Everything we do is solution-based at the end, even when we look at the pandemic, even when we say, you know, okay, wait, stop. Everybody stop what they're doing. We got to figure this out real quick. How did this happen? What's the worst case scenario? Like, what can we do now? We need a vaccine. Yes, but that's down here, right? What about now? These are the things we need to do now. Right now, you need to stay at home. Right now, you need to wear a mask. Saying that, but then saying on the other side, like, okay, yeah, you're wearing a mask, but I'm going to be honest that it may not, it's a good chance it won't work. Like, okay, I'm aware of the mask, but why am I wearing the mask, right? Like, you're not solving the problem. Help me solve the problem. So these things happen. We don't want to get in the weeds because we're impatient and we don't want to waste the time on that. We want, give me a solution. I don't care if it's temporary. Give it to me. And what happens when we do the temporary solution, we cross off our list, wipe our hands off, and we move on to the next thing. Instead of saying this is a temporary solution, we need to focus on something that's actually going to solve the problem. You know, since then, we always joke in my house because there were so many variants, and they're like, oh, there's another variant, and I was like, it's not going to end. Like, I don't know why y'all think you're going to wake up one day and they'd be like, you know what's gone? The coronavirus. It's not going anywhere. Like, it's a virus. Like, it's going to, if we're going to have herd immunity, it's going to take a long time. I might be somebody's great grandma by then when I get to talk about the coronavirus, like my grandparents talked about smallpox, like, right? Like, I could be very, very old when that happens. But what do we do now? We take COVID tests and we try to process information, but we're not doing, you know, the things that we used to do, right? Like, my friend has COVID. I said, is there still contact tracing? Like, do you still have to tell somebody? And she's like, oh, I didn't go to the doctor. I took a home test and it was positive. Like, do I need to tell somebody? I don't know. I'm not going to the doctor. Like, I feel fine. Like, you know, so I joked. I said, well, who knows? Our kids go to the same camp. I said, there could be 60 kids up there with COVID and nobody would ever know because they're not doing the same things they did before. And so we don't, as a community, have those conversations, right? Like, I can have that with my best friend. But the reality is, somewhere in our brain, when there was a vaccine, we thought it was over and we moved on, and it's not over. Somewhere in our brain, we tend to think once we create a law or a mandate or a rule for something, it's over and we can move on without actually addressing the problem, right? The problem is there are going to be all types of viruses and things that happen, right? It's going to happen. There are going to be, laws that we don't like and that we need to address and that we need to change. And we need to figure out if we're talking about protecting ourselves personally or if we're talking about the greater good of a community. Like, we struggle with this. We pick and choose and we are inconsistent. And so I respect someone if they're consistent along the selfish part. Like, it's just me. If you're consistent, like, I can respect that. Like, well, at least she's consistent. Like, she believes in gun rights, abortion rights, and she wasn't wearing a mask. Like, they're consistent. Like, you know, they believe in their right to do whatever they want. I have yet to see that. Somebody has an opinion about something that has to do with the rights of others and how that affects other people. That's not just them personally. But it's usually that one thing or maybe two things, and that's it.
I want to thank you so much for the generosity of your time today. And at this point, I just want to open a little space. If there's anything you want to say that my questions haven't made room for, please take some space and say so.
Yeah, I guess the only thing I want to say, which is kind of far left, but I do want to say that I think it's important when we talk about anything that's happening, today, that we go all the way back, that we don't pick and choose where in history we want to go back, right? That we go all the way back. Because going all the way back on, like I said, even if we go all the way back and look at smallpox or whatever viruses came before that, or we go all the way back and look at, genocide and colonization, all those things. If we go all the way back and we look at, the women's rights movement when it came to birth control and abortion, if we look at that, go all the way back. Don't just start where people started speaking up. you got to go all the way back to look at what the circumstances were when it was okay. Because that tells us a lot more about what's happening now than that moment when people started speaking up. Make sure if you're thinking about history, you're thinking about it holistically, and you're not just picking and choosing where you want to start your history at in order to prove the thing that you're hoping to prove that we need or don't need.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.